And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, and it's brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an OO and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2337th Avenue in Regina. Go see Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff, great gang over there doing superb work in the auto body industry. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent out, or you'd like to rent a travel trailer this summer, wheelestate.ca is where you check it out. All their rentals are backed by a $1 million insurance policy. Check them out at wheelestate.ca. If you want to get in the real estate game, either buying or selling here in the Regina area, you got to check out Paul Waldo, three-time Grey Cup champ. He's taking his winning ways over to Royal LePage Home Realty Experts. Give him a call, 306-502-5355. We've got a great show in store. We're going to hear from Len Antonini of the Regina Minor Football League about their registration and a new girls team that's firing up in Regina, playing with the likes of Yorkton, Melville, and Moosomin in a little mini league there. Also going to talk to Garrett Glassrud. He's a coach, was the head coach of the Shaunavon Shadows high school football team. He's on his way to Colorado to ply his trade in NCAA Division II football. And we're going to hear from Darian Durant, the Devils take. But first, another Rough Rider legendary quarterback, Kerry Joseph, in our Where Are They Now segment. This is Where Are They Now? We're pleased to be joined by former Rider quarterback Kerry Joseph. Kerry, fill the folks in. What are you doing now, my friend?
Right now, I'm still coaching at McNeese State University. Coaching quarterbacks now. I'm still working as the co-OC here at McNeese at the time.
Kerry, is that something you always wanted to do, be a coach? I know you had some time with the New Orleans Saints there in training camp and working with them, but is that always something you wanted to do, be a coach?
You know what? I started realizing that later on in my career. I think it started really when I went back to playing and I went to Edmonton, and I was kind of that leader in the locker room and that role player, just helping younger guys understand the game of football. I think that's when I really, really started that passion started to drive me. And also in my off season, working with Trent Dilfer and the Nike crew, doing the Elite 11 deals with high school kids, teaching those kids the game, you know, the game of football, the techniques and the fundamentals. I felt that I was in a happy place when I was doing that and I was giving back to the game.
You know, I've always thought this. You know, we talk about the big topic up here always amongst us Canadians is Canadians playing the quarterback spot up here, and we haven't really had a solid guy since Russ Jackson back in Ottawa way back in the day. The Riders, of course, have had Brandon Bridge in here, and he's had his struggles, but he did get his schooling down south. A lot of people say you need to go down south to play football and learn, but I often wonder why guys like you, Darian Durant, those kind of guys, don't come up here and have football camps for young guys like this up here in Canada. Because I mean, I'll tell you what, not only from a learning standpoint but a moneymaker standpoint, it could be something that's an untapped market, Kerry.
I think it really can be. I know for me, like right now in my job profession and coaching college football, with the way recruiting is, it's almost like a 365 day a year job, and it's tough sometimes to really get away. I think there is a market for that. I think you just kind of have to allow it to fit your schedule depending on what you're doing. I know, like for me, you know, I get a week vacation and that's it. Other than that, you know, my phone never stops. So I think it is something that could be really beneficial to the youth in Canada. And maybe it's something that a bunch of alumni and veterans can maybe get together and try to do something on a yearly basis.
Okay, so let me ask you, my friend. As a player, you played and you worked out and you looked after your body and stuff. So it was a year-round job, but you got to get away from the game a bit. You got to do other things. As a coach, it seems like you got to eat, breathe, live football. Have you really found that difference moving into the coaching ranks?
It is different, especially at the collegiate level. You know, when you look at the NFL, in the off season, they have a set schedule, and they have, you know, 4 to 5 weeks before they go to training camp off. Collegiately, some colleges have it also. You know, the bigger schools, they give their coaches, you know, 3 to 4 weeks off before they get going. We do ours a little different here at McNeese, you know. So we have camps that we, high school camps, youth camps that we put on, So our time is a little bit more demanding. Plus, our guys are in school all summer. So it takes a little bit more out of us here where we are and the way we do it at McNeese. And we've been doing it for a long time that way, and we've been successful. So regardless of who's the head coach, we just have not changed it.
What's your ultimate goal, Kerry Joseph? Where do you want to go in your football journey now?
Our ultimate goal is to eventually be a head coach, whether it be at the collegiate level or the NFL, in the professional level. You know, I get a chance this year to coach quarterbacks for the first time. So my next position, I'm looking to move to be a coordinator and to be an offensive coordinator and have the opportunity to call the game.
In your life, Kerry, who is the best coach you were around in terms of teaching you the game at the quarterback position?
So you're going to put me on the spot like that?
Yeah.
You know what? I have some great coaches. I'm going to tell you why. I was blessed with guys that played the position. I was blessed with Joe Pawpaw, Ken Austin. I was blessed with a guy, Tommy Condell. So I had people around me that played the position that helped me develop in the CFL as a quarterback. And I credit all those guys. I'm not going to say one was better than the other because they all had their different strengths and different weaknesses. I just tapped into all of their knowledge and all of their strengths. And I tried to put that, you know, down in Louisiana, we love gumbo.
Mm-hmm.
And in gumbo, you put a lot of different ingredients. So I tried to make my own gumbo pot from a quarterback and taking all the ingredients from those guys and helping me develop. You know, so I have to credit all those guys. And I can't forget Danny Barrett, another one. You know, he played the position. You look at those four guys are very instrumental in my development and my success in the CFL.
Kerry Joseph joining us here. Where are they now? One of the Rider greats, and we'll talk about you know, his Rider career quickly in a second here. Kerry, where's your strength as a coach right now?
Right now, it's just, you know, giving these kids a lot of wisdom because I've played the game. And as a quarterback, you know, I tell people all the time, I played on the defensive side for 4 years in Seattle. That helped me so much to understand defenses and understand the game from both sides of the football. I think that's the biggest strength that I have. Because you find so many coaches on defense, all they study is defense. They never study offense. And then you find offensive coaches that all they study is offense but never really study defense. I was blessed to play on both sides, and I think that's the real strength and the leadership qualities that I've been able to develop over the years that I can actually give back to these young men and also share with coaches that I'm on staff with.
That's an excellent point, Kerry Joseph. So let me ask you this. Did you have a quarterback background? I didn't see that in your bio. Did you have a quarterback background before you went to the NFL and played safety? And just an extension of that question, then how the heck did you end up a quarterback in the Canadian Football League?
Well, that's all I played. I grew up as a quarterback. You know, when you look through my high school, my youth, my high school, my college career, I played quarterback. My first year in Cincinnati with the Bengals, I was a quarterback there on the roster. And then I switched to defense. Defense was the oddball for me. And I played defense for 4 years. And then I went back, you know, when Eric Tillman called me to come to Canada. And, you know, he had followed me through my career at McNeese. It's when I flipped back to quarterback. But I think that transition was easy for me because I was coming from the defensive side of the football and I understood defenses differently. And that's one thing I encourage a lot of young quarterbacks. Go sit with a defensive coordinator. Learn what the defense is trying to do. Learn coverages. Learn where guys are dropping, where they fit in zones. Now, when you have a concept offensively, you can kind of see where the weaknesses are in the defense. That's what helped me.
Interesting. Very good point, Kerry Joseph, joining us here. Where are they now? When I say 2007 year, big year for you, what instantly pops into your head?
Labor Day Classic. You know, it's. I think that game there is always going to be one that pops right in my head because it's always replayed every year for Labor Day. And then the Grey Cup, you know, just that moment in Toronto, just with the Rider fans all over the city of Toronto, those two moments right there are going to always stick with me for a long time.
You know, it hurt you for sure, and it hurt a lot of Rider fans when you were traded unceremoniously after your MOP season. I mean, it's funny. You're like a shooting star here. You came in 2006, and boom, just like that, Kerry Joseph was gone. And, you know, it left a bitter taste in a lot of people's mouths. How bitter were you when you left?
I was very bitter about it because I thought things could be done differently. So I was bitter. When you lay everything on the line for your teammates, for your city, the things that I was doing in the community, for the organization, I just felt things could have been handled a little bit different. But it's a business. And, when you see other guys being treated a certain way when they win, you just want to be treated fairly. And that's all Kerry Joseph was looking for, to be treated fairly. It didn't work out that way. I hold no grudges toward it because I think that moment actually made me a better person. And it's something I use now in coaching that, hey, sometimes you can control some things, sometimes you can't. Control the things that you can control. And I know it left a lot of fans bitter because people really never knew the logistics of everything. And I said that I would never go into the media with it, that if people wanted to take shots at me, that I was going to be the bigger person and take the shots. But it was unfortunate because I didn't want to leave Ryderville because I felt that there was some championships on the horizon with the team that we had and the organization and the structure of everything.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And they had a good run after you left. Kerry, but you got to come back in 2015. Did that kind of help close the chapter on Ryderville for you? I know the season didn't end the way you wanted to, but you almost won that semifinal game. You had been out of football for a bit. Did that kind of wrap up your tenure here on a better note?
It did. You know what? It did. I told my wife that I wanted to go back and sign a one-day contract with the Riders, and I wanted to retire as a Rider because I felt that those fans deserved it, and I felt that they poured out a lot into me, into my career. So when I had that opportunity, I really felt that it was God-driven to send me back there for those 6 weeks. Unfortunately, it didn't end the way we wanted it to. But I had an opportunity to say thank you and close out the final chapter of my career. And that's when I kind of knew it was time for me to move on because things things wasn't right anymore.
Mm. Hey, Kerry, has anybody contacted you from the Plaza Committee? Because I know there's supposed to be this rule where you have to play for the Riders for 4 years, but I've argued on behalf of you and said, this guy was an MOP and he won a Grey Cup, and nobody's won an MOP or a Grey Cup in the same season except one other guy, and his name is Ron Lancaster. Has anybody contacted you yet?
Nobody has contacted me yet. I know I have some people that's fighting for me to get in. And I understand that they have a rule. My case on it is I would never try to market myself for it. I think my work on the field speaks volume. And I didn't leave Saskatchewan by my choice. It's not like that I was a free agent and I said, you know what, I'm leaving. It was a business decision that the organization made, and it's nothing I can do about it. So, if I get punished due to that, there's nothing else I can say or nothing else I can do.
I think you'll be in for sure one day, my friend, and I can't wait for that day. And just back to your 2007 memory of the Labor Day, I wasn't at that game. I was about 20 blocks away listening on the radio, and all of a sudden I heard this roar from the crowd, and Kerry Joseph scores a touchdown. So that will go down in my memory forever. Thanks for this, Kerry. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Good talking to you guys.
Growing the game now, and our guest is Len Anthony from Regina Minor Football. And Len, it's that time of year again as we've got football on the brain, especially at the amateur level.
Yeah, the kids all started practicing on August 7th. So, they're getting ready to get going. They're starting to pick up their equipment. They're at the Rams camp. They're having some fun, and we get going. Early August now.
All right, Len. Are you taking any sometimes people are on the fence. They don't know what they're doing. Summer holidays, blah, blah, blah. Are you taking any late registrations?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have some spots left. If you go online and register at rmf@reginaminorfootball.ca, you can end up just getting your registration in, and we can go from there. We can help you out and try to get you on a team. We try to get you on a team in your area. If we can't, then we'll let you know, and we'll try to get you on a team somewhere else.
I've coached football. I love it. Obviously, I broadcast it as I'm talking to you right here. You know, goal setting, team building, team bonding, working together, discipline, all that type of stuff. It really, really breeds the youth into the people that are going to run our community down the road. And I like football because compared to other sports, it's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you too much, you know, and there's, you know, a lot of ways to, you know, if you can't really afford it, we try to help you out a bit. But, no, it's not that expensive. No one pays more than $310. So, it's, you know, that's for the whole season. And so it works out pretty good for the kids that, you know, to get a chance to play.
You know, and we look at it. If I'm a parent and I don't know anything about the sport and I'm trying to get into it, I'm thinking, okay, equipment. Like, talk about your equipment because you guys are always cleaning. You're always making sure it's up to date, making sure it's safe for the kids.
Yeah, everything we have is, you know, A1. We've got great helmets, great shoulder pads that we lend the kids, and then we sell the other equipment. And the other equipment you can buy the pants and the girdle for less than $100. So it's, you know, to get going in football, it doesn't cost you that much money at all.
You know what's great, Len? The one aspect of football that's growing, the female division, and we got a female team in the RMF. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a team that, you know, we're looking at for girls from grade 7 till grade 12. You know, it's a big range, but, you know, with the girls, a lot of times they're capable of doing it. And we're going to play in a league with Musselman, Melville, and Yorkton. So it's going to be a traveling team for the girls. You know, we're going to treat it probably a lot like our U16 program. You know, we got Ryan Hall, who's coached at Campbell Collegiate. He's going to be the head coach. And, you know, we're going to do things like we did do for any of the football teams that we have. That team there is going to be pretty good. And again, the girls can go online as well. I think I gave you my email address, but the website is www.reginaminorfootball.ca. They can go on and register there. And they're going to start up August 25th and 26th with a training camp and play four games. So it's going to be, we're excited about the girls in the game.
I know Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner, said, you know what, if I want to know about amateur football, I got to see the model that the Regina Minor football run. So that's a nice feather in your cap, you, Kelly Hamilton, all the great volunteers out there. What I like about, we talk about the stars of tomorrow today, and you really find them on these Regina Minor football fields. I know it's not a football factory. We're not thinking pros here, but when you look at it here, the U16 team's always around near the top. You guys, you lost in, I believe it was the final to Quebec, and then you've got the U18 team comprised of a lot of Southern Saskatchewan kids, a lot of kids from RMF. I think 8 Miller kids were on that team, just for an example, and they win the U18 for the first time since 2010. So it's a really nice feather in the cap for RMF and surrounding area.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We got that, like our U16 team did very well. You know, you beat Ontario. They've got 14 million people there. You know, we beat them with half the province. You know, we draw our team from half the province. And then you take a look at that, the U18 team, and, you know, that the football in Saskatchewan, we're doing really well. And even the Team Canada that was down in Mexico, there was quite a few guys from Regina on that team, or a couple anyways. And,
yeah.
You know, we have a pretty good number of kids playing there too. So football at the next level is very good for us. But we're really happy with what we do with our minor kids. You know, we get between, you know, 1,400 to 1,700 kids that get an opportunity to play football and learn about discipline and relationships. And you know, in football, they're really important, but in life, they're really important as well.
Yeah, you were referring to Josh White, Jackson Ford, and Tanner Schmeckel, two Campbell guys and a Riffle guy who played for the Rams that won the U19 gold there. And, of course, the Mexican kicker is the guy that's going to be playing for the Rams as well this year. Yeah, you know, just to wrap up, Len, I know there's been a lot of talk about football and injuries and concussions. You can get injured in any sport doing anything, boxing, baseball, it doesn't matter. I mean, football is a contact sport. You know you're going to face a little bit of contact. But where I'm going with this is football has changed. I mean, your facility is so much better back in the day when I was growing up out there. It was a dirt field with gopher holes, and now it's a state-of-the-art facility. And, you know, you got coaches that are better equipped in terms of coaching the kids with regards to safe tackling, and you got better equipment. This sport really has evolved. It's as safe as it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we're pretty happy. We have a very strong concussion protocol. You know, we don't have a whole bunch of concussions. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, in every level of football, there's a whole bunch. But, you know, we track them, and we don't have a whole bunch. We look after the kids, too, if they do, you know, if things happen. And like you say, you know, our equipment is second to none. You know, nowadays our coaching, everybody has to have the safe contact training. A lot of them have the levels, you know, the NCCP levels, and you know, it's just a different atmosphere compared to before. You know, the way we tackle, the way we block, everything. We don't use our heads like they did in the olden days, and we're pretty happy with how safe it is.
That's Len Antonini with Regina Minor Football and Growing the Game. Thanks for this, Len.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ballsy. I'll talk to you later.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2337th Avenue. By realestate.ca, if you want a travel trailer to rent out or you want to rent a travel trailer, you can check them out at realestate.ca. And if you want to get into the real estate game, check out Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home realty experts. Give him a call, 306-502-5355. Joining me is Garrett Glassrud, the outgoing coach of the Shaunavon High School football team. How are you today, Garrett?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good, man. So right now as we speak, you're on your way to Colorado, and you're not going for a family vacation. You're switching jobs. Tell us about it.
Yeah, decided to, you know, take a little bit of a chance here, I guess. You know, leaving the shadows behind for this year and headed down to Gunnison, Colorado to coach linebackers for Western State University.
That's NCAA Division II, right?
Yes, that is correct. They play Division II in the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference.
So how did this come to be?
You know, it come on real quick there. I guess it's just through contacts. You know, there was a couple coaches at university when I played that I've always stayed in contact with, and the circle seems pretty small. And randomly, you know, I got just a message there saying, hey, I know you're still coaching. These guys are just made a position. It's real short notice. They're looking for somebody. Would you be interested in talking to this coach? And before you knew it, I was talking to the defensive coordinator at Western State, and it kept rolling from there. And I kind of said, if I can make it work, this is a opportunity I can't turn down. So here I am.
Okay, so Shaunavon Shadows, correct me. What is it, nine-man? What is that?
Yeah, we in Shaunavon there, we played nine-man. They've been nine-man their whole life, you know. But the last couple of years, we've had a lot of fun, and the community's really grown to enjoy football. Youth football started. There's three different age groups they play in town now. So, you know, it's always been known as a hockey community, but the big thing is here in southwest Saskatchewan, Shaunavon now is getting on board with football, and it's really growing.
So how bittersweet is it for you to leave something that's growing fast in Shaunavon?
Well, to be honest, it was pretty hard. The big thing is, I guess, I've had my fun there for the last 6 years. We've won a few championships. And I kind of thought, you know, this is a perfect time here now to let somebody else step in and bring some of their ideas to the table, allow them to grow the sport in town, allow them to grow the program, and just see how it does.
So who's taking over for the great Garrett Glassrud?
We've got a new head coach there named Jordy Thomas. He's a young guy that was the offensive coordinator the last couple of years, and he's a local guy in town there, and he's also somebody that I coached quite a few years ago. So he's excited. He knows how the program kind of works, and he should be a great leader.
So is it going to be a little bit of a change for you going nine-man to, I guess, 11-man football now?
But the big thing is at university when I was in Montana, I played 11-man. And to be honest with you, nine-man and American 11-man football are very similar. I actually find Canadian football to be a little more difficult for me to understand, you know, as far as schemes and pass coverages. So I think the big thing for me was when this come up that I felt confident enough that I could work with the 11-man game and that I could take this chance.
Okay, a couple more quick questions for you, Garrett Glassrud, here on Growing the Game with Ballsy. What are your aspirations for coaching? How do you want this football journey to go for you?
Well, you know, to be honest, I really just wanted to get into coaching something serious, you know, a little bit more competitive. I enjoyed what I did at high school level, and that was fine. And the end trail, I'm not exactly sure where that'll lead, but I know that taking a chance to coach NCAA football was something I would regret if I didn't jump on it. So this will be, you know, maybe a step into the future. It also might be something that I try out and would enjoy coming home and coaching the Shaunavon Shadows for the next 40 years.
So do you have
find that trail when we hit it, I guess.
Do you have a family you're packing up and taking with you?
Yeah, we got the whole rodeo loaded up here and ready to go, and they'll spend the season down there with me, and we'll try and make the best of it.
How big a family you got?
We got the dog and the newborn baby and my wife, so it's just going to be the four of us, and away we go.
Well, I love your moxie to try something new in a different country for sure. Where is Gunnison, by the way?
Gunnison is actually in the mountains there, just south of Aspen, straight southwest of Denver. So we're kind of isolated a little ways from Denver there, but, you know, it's in the southern end of the state. So it's beautiful country from what I've seen. I've never been there yet myself, but we'll find out what it's like when we get there, I'm sure.
Sure wasn't too hard to convince your wife to go by Aspen and near Denver.
Yeah, the sales pitch there was pretty easy. Yeah. You know, we'll see. It should make for some nice scenery and being outdoors and things like that.
Okay, lastly, Garrett, who influenced you as a coach to keep you invigorated and in this sport? Because it always takes a coach. You know, I always say when I'm coaching minor football, who cares about championships? If I'm coaching Adam, my goal is to get them to want to play football in Pee Wee. Then it's to want them to get them to play football in Bantam and so on and keep them going. Who is that coach for you?
Yeah, that's you're exactly right. And to be honest, there was one guy in particular. You know, I'd spent 3-4 years helping coach the Shadows team, and it was actually Tim Klein out of Indian Head. He's the head coach there for the Indian Head Bronx, the 9-man high school team. And in 2013, he invited me to be a coach for the Saskota Bowl, which is our Team Saskatchewan 9-man guys that we play against North Dakota. And that first year when I did Saskota Bowl, I realized how much I actually enjoy coaching. And from there, it grew to doing Senior Bowl and Saskota Bowls. And then the last couple of years, it grew to being a part of the U18 provincial team here, the Team Sask team that goes to the Canada Cup. So really, it was the whole stage of all these coaches that I started to meet through Saskatchewan and Football Sask. And just being around those guys and doing these elite programs really showed me how much I do love coaching and love the sport, and I just wanted to keep pushing at it.
Hey, were you on the coaching staff this year that won the championship?
Well, I was an associate coach for that one. We didn't make the tournament, but we did the training camps, and we had our U18 selects team that traveled to Red Deer, and we made that trip. So those guys pulled the gold medal off there in Calgary, which is huge. You know, football in the province is just booming right now.
It's awesome, man. And look at this. One of the guys off the Saskatchewan tree going to Colorado to ply his trade. Good luck, Garrett Glassrud.
Perfect. Thank you very much, sir.
Time now for the Doubles Take on the Rough Rider Radio Network with Rider great Darian Durant. Darian, how do we find you today? How are you, my friend?
Doing great as always. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing okay, man. Getting ready for a Rough Rider game against the Edmonton Eskimos on a short week. And we talked about this a little bit earlier on the broadcast. Your week is more mental this week, isn't it, if you're a quarterback?
Sure. Anytime there's a short week, guys' bodies are still usually recovering from the previous game. Coaches don't want to beat you down too much. They want you to be as fresh as possible going into that game on the short week. So it's all mental. It's all about getting the game plan down and learning your opponent. And, you know, you try to take it easy physically just so you're ready to go.
It's interesting. We don't know yet what we have in Zach Collaros. We don't know if he's the Zach Collaros of 2014, 2015, or closer to the one that's been injured and lacking confidence the last little bit. I'm interested to see how he's going to perform today coming off that concussion.
I am too, especially with such a long layoff. You know, you just never know. And now you throw him into a game with so much meaning, a Western opponent. You're coming off a tough loss, and you're on the road. It's just a it's a tough environment, a tough game to be thrown in coming back from such a long layoff. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, how he fares coming off of that concussion.
And he said that it was an injury that happened in the preseason and he kept it under wraps and wasn't really honest with the training staff. Let me ask Darian Durant, yeah. How many times did you keep an injury to yourself, my friend?
Not many. I think the thing you have to do is trust your training staff and trust their judgments. I think if you let them know what's going on early, they can assess it and then tell you what's best for you, especially something as serious as a concussion. You know, that's something you don't want to hide. As you can see with Zach, it lingered on and on. And, you know, it didn't take much of a hit for it to basically come back to him. So that's one of those injuries you could never tell how serious it is, and you want to let the trainers know as early as possible. But, you know, something like a sprained ankle or a finger or something like that, of course you want to let the trainers know. 9 times out of 10, they're not going to pull you out, and I think that's what Zach was more concerned about than anything. You know, he's coming to a new team, new teammates, new environment, and, you know, he just wanted to make sure he was there to start the season. But as we can see, it kind of backfired on him. He ended up missing more time than he probably would have if he would have just let the trainers know his injury. So it's tough, man. It's tough trying to be, you know, a really macho instead of you know, going to let the trainers know what's going on. I understand where he's coming from for sure.
Yeah, and you lead me into something I was going to ask you about. So it's just perfect, Darian. You know, you're coming to a new team. You kind of have the last couple of years the perception that you're kind of quote unquote a Band-Aid, which, you know, is probably unfair. But, you know, it's got to be tough for some of these guys to block out that criticism, especially when they're going to a new team. So I could see why he'd want to keep things under wraps.
Exactly. You know, new contract, new environment. The expectations on the team was so high during the preseason. And you're coming in and you're expected to be the missing piece from a team that was a couple plays away from making a Grey Cup appearance. So the pressure was definitely on him. I understand why he didn't let the trainers know his injury. But like I said, here we are now. It kind of backfired on him. He missed about 6 weeks. And, you know, he really could have helped that team out during those weeks. So, you know, like I said, it's a thin line between being macho and being smart. And, you know, knowing what I know now, you definitely have to let the trainers know what's going on so they can be there to help you to prevent things like this from going on.
When I'm watching this Riders game and this Riders team, it's almost like, and I don't know if it's because of personnel, i.e. the quarterback spot, but it almost feels like they're treating the offense like it's an inconvenience, like, oh, no, we got to send these guys out in the field again. What is your take on what you saw against the Calgary Stampeders?
You know, I kind of get the same feeling you just described, and I guess another thing that would come to mind is just there's no trust from the coaches. I mean, there was no trust in Brandon to be able to push the ball downfield. You know, you, especially with a guy like Naaman Roosevelt, I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago. You have to find creative ways to get him the ball. He's a legit top 2-3 receiver in the league, in my opinion. You have to make sure that schematically you do things that can get him open. And, you know, from what I see, I don't think the staff trusts Brandon Bridge that much. And you know, Coach Jones feels like that defense and special teams can keep him in the game with the chance to win at the end. You know, like we discussed, you can kind of do that against those Eastern teams, but when you get out West, and you're dealing with quarterbacks like Mike Riley and Lule and Nichols and, you know, these top-tier guys, then you can't get away with that. You have to put points on the board. And, you know, if you don't trust your quarterback, you're not going to score many points.
Okay, let me ask you this question, though, my friend. You've played this position at a very high level, okay? And I just – I'm not sticking up for the coaches, but from what you saw in that game and from what you've seen from Brandon Bridge – Should they have a lot of trust in him? I mean, he doesn't have a lot of touch on the ball. The ball sails high, it sails wide. I saw the analytics after the game, Darian. He was only on target 20% of his passes. So it's kind of like asking a chef to make a steak when he's not working with the right ingredients. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I guess my counter to that would be when things weren't going well last year with Kevin. you know, Brandon was the guy that you had faith in to come in and bring you back, or to get the offense going when they're in a slump and things like that. So if you have that type of confidence in him in those situations, then I'm kind of puzzled as to why you don't have that confidence in him now. And I think a lot of his struggles come from coaches not having confidence in him, worrying about, is Wofford going to come in after two series if I throw a bad ball, or if it's an incomplete pass, or if we're two and out, you know, am I going to get pulled? Those are things you don't need to be worried about as a quarterback, and I'm sure that weighs heavily on his mind, and it probably is leading to some of the inconsistencies that you're seeing from him in his throwing. But, you know, it's a tough situation for Brandon. I understand. I was in that with Stephen Giles a couple years back, and thankfully, you know, Coach Miller decided to just ride it out with me throughout the struggles. But I think that's something that Brandon would need to gain that confidence.
All right, Darian Durant joining us here for the Doubles Take. So how much does a quarterback's coach come into play here when your offensive coordinator doesn't seem to have a lot of trust? You need that guy that you can lean on, now that Kevin Glenn isn't here, because that's what Bridge did. He was leaning on Kevin Glenn. In fact, he still phones Kevin Glenn. How much will Steve Walsh help out in a situation like this?
I think he can help him out, you know, but with Steve Walsh being new to the league, I know Brandon kind of has a thought in the back of his head. You know, not anything negative, but that's probably why he leans on Kevin, because Kevin's been there, done that. Not saying Steve hasn't, but he's new to the CFL game. He doesn't understand the complex defenses, you know, that these defensive coordinators are putting up against Brandon. So I think that's why he may be leaning on Kevin a little bit more. Kevin's been there. He's seen every coverage. He knows every single defensive coordinator in the league. And I think that's what Brandon is doing. But having a quarterback coach is crucial. You need a guy to lean on when you come off the field that has been in the fire, who understands what you're going through, especially in a time when you're struggling. So hopefully, you know, Brandon can regain that confidence. Maybe it would be a good thing for him to sit back and not have to deal with the pressure, and just see what Zach can do, and, you know, just see the offense open up a little bit. And if he's needed, such a long season, and if he's needed later on this season, he can get his confidence back and be able to help the team.
We saw him a bit last week, but I'd be ticked if I was Brandon Bridge. I'm out now. Kolaris is in, and he gets back Daron Carter full time.
Yeah, that's you hate to see that. I mean, for a young guy trying to establish himself in the league like Brandon is trying to do, and then you take his number one weapon and put him on defense for 6 weeks, and then as soon as Zach comes back, he's gone. That's got to be a terrible feeling. And that leads me back to what I was saying about the coaches not having confidence in Brandon. You know, that's just a sad situation, in my opinion. He's a guy that was, you know, dedicated to the team. He was a free agent in the offseason. He came back with, you know, in confidence that the coaches had confidence in whatever it is that he could do. And you just feel bad in that situation.
All right. Darian, a couple more quick questions for Darian Durant here on the Doubles Take. So, Darian, Johnny Manziel is starting his first game. I imagine as a quarterback that played this position at a high level, you're eagerly anticipating how he's going to do.
I am. I'm anxiously awaiting his debut to see if he can handle, you know, the CFL game. The thing I don't like is the situation he's in with the team. You know, he's so new to the CFL. He's new to the game, the playbook. And, you know, his offensive line hasn't been playing really well this year. So it may be a disaster for him, but we'll see. The thing I do have confidence in is that he can make some plays against the defense that he was going against every day in training camp. He has some familiarity with that defense and that team, that defensive coordinator. So, you know, you can't say enough about that. So hopefully he can go in. I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for all young guys coming in. But it won't be easy, especially at this part of the season. And, you know, I don't think he has much help on that team.
All right. Lastly, I want to go back to Brandon Bridge for a second. He gets, obviously, coaching at the field with the Rider coaches. He's been phoning Kevin Glenn. He's been sitting down with Nick Lewis and going through film on a regular basis. Can you get advice from too many people? Is that dangerous?
Yes, it is. You know, the thing you don't want as a quarterback is for one person to be telling you this, and then someone else is telling you something different. Then you go back to your coaches, and they want another thing. Now you're just in a situation mentally where you're just confused about a lot of things. Here, Brandon is a young quarterback trying to show not just the Saskatchewan coaches, but coaches around the league that he can play. He can be a franchise quarterback. And then, you know, you're hearing advice from here, there, and the other. It can be a recipe for disaster. You know, my advice to him would be just try to execute the offense that the coaches want run at the highest level possible and go from there. Because if too many people are in your ear, like I said, he's still trying to establish himself. If he was a franchise quarterback, he had a team, he's looking for, you know, little pointers here or there, then I understand. But when you're trying to establish yourself, I think you just really need to stay focused and listen to what your coaches have to say.
Okay, so I got to address this. The fourth quarter of the 2013 semifinal against the BC Lions here, that was Darian Durant's pinnacle of your career, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You took that team on your back. You ran for like 90 yards in that game, most of it in the fourth quarter. Just take us through that situation, because it was like Darian Durant against the world.
Yeah, I mean, early on in that game, you know, we were pretty good at establishing Corey Sheets early on in the game, and BC made it a point to come out and shut Corey down. I think we hit Corey on a screen pass because they were so aggressive for about 60, 65 yards early in that game, but they were determined to stop Corey. And as the game progressed, you could kind of feel it slipping away. And, you know, Weston, he looked at me and said, "Look, Dubs, we got to make a play." And, you know, that's when something just clicked in my head and said, you know, I went through all the scenarios, all the Grey Cups we lost in the past, how this particular Grey Cup in 13 was going to be played at home. You know, it could be one of the greatest moments in not only my life, but in the history of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So I just said to myself, there's no way that we're going to lose this game. Whatever I have to do, the time is now. Don't think twice about it. Coach Cortez, he explained to me that some of the running lanes were open. If I didn't like what I saw downfield, don't worry about going to my second and third read. Just pull the ball down and go. And I did it. And I was able to make a ton of plays in that fourth quarter to seal the deal. And, you know, I'm glad that it's looked at as one of the biggest games of my life and in Rough Rider history. And I'm just happy to be a part of that. So that was my mentality. I can't lose. It's just too much going on. We've had too many heartbreaking losses in the past. And when you get a guy like Weston look you in your eye and say, "Dubs, we got to make a play. Let's go." There's nothing left to be said. It's time to go.
Reason I bring that up is because early on in your career, you were a guy that you could throw the ball, but you ran around and made plays with your legs. Okay. As you got on, I wouldn't call you an old guy there, but as you got on, you were more a pocket passer, more of the field general, but there you kind of went back to what made your money there. You were running with your legs, and it kind of ties into the start of the interview where you're telling, you know, Brandon Bridge just to concentrate and believe your eyes and believe in what you are.
Yeah, I mean, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, if one thing as a professional quarterback, especially, you don't make it this far, you know, just being either a runner or a passer. You have to be able to do both. And, you know, it's about timing. It's about when you bring out those things. Early on, like you said, I was a young guy, not really worried about taking hits. You know, I was a strong guy, as we know. So, you know, the hits didn't bother me as much. But then as you get older, you have to be smart. You know, you realize that as a franchise quarterback, if you're not available, then you're not helping your team. So that season, I took it upon myself, especially under the tutelage of Kahari Jones and George Cortez. They helped me out so much with the offense and allowing me to develop as a passer. And it just so happened that in that game, nothing was working for us, and thankfully I still had the ability to pull down the ball and run a little bit, and I was able to make it happen.
Absolutely, and it was a great year, and we'll have more with Darian Durant as the season progresses. We're happy he's a part of our team now. Thanks for this, Darian.
Oh, no question. Thank you.
And that brings to a close another edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy. It's brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair at 2330 7th Avenue. It's brought to you by Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home realty experts. Give him a call, 306-502-5355. And if you have a travel trailer you want to rent out, or you want to rent a travel trailer this summer, give Wheel Estate a shot. Check them out at Wheel Estate. rentalsmart.ca. All their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy. If you have a story you'd like me to pursue, please email me, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast and help us grow the game of football in Saskatchewan, you can email me at that same address, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Also want to remind you, you can hear me each weekday morning, Monday to Friday on 104.9 The Wolf FM with Chad McDonald, Chad and Ballsy in the morning, and on the Rider broadcast, Rough Rider Game Day, 3 hours before every Rough Rider game, and our A&W Sports Cage Radio Roundtable following the broadcast. Until next week, we'll talk to you later.